Welcome to the first edition of the Hashtag Dynasty Fantasy Basketball Podcast. My name is Jordan Schultz, and I'm one of your co-hosts tonight. I'm joined by Sam Macy. How are you doing, Sam?
I'm good, thanks, Matt. Yourself?
Couldn't complain too much. It's a little bit late here where we're going, where I'm out here in Oregon, so it's about 11 p.m., so sorry if I sound tired at all, but we'll power through. And I mean, really, you know, one of the great things about the NBA is there's really never a time where there's not something going on. And, you know, we had our podcast notes all ready to go. And then, of course, this morning news break of that Carmelo Anthony's been dealt to the Oklahoma City Thunder. You know, just this league never sleeps. So what was your immediate takeaway on the Carmelo trade?
I had to sort through about 25 notifications on my phone for basically from my friends, from Bleacher Report, everything else you can see on there. Had to jump on. As you know, I was away on a sort of a holiday, so there wasn't much internet or reception out there, so I sort of had to go out on the deck and have a good look, managed to see what was going on, and again, bad luck for the Knicks.
I mean, really, when you look at some of the other trades that went down, I mean, it wasn't the best, but I don't think it was the worst.
No, they could have gotten worse.
Yeah, that's true. I just don't really understand why you'd bring back, you know, the best player in that trade, you know, Enes Kanter. I mean, I feel like their future pieces are pretty much already set there, and Porzingis and Willie Hernan Gomez.
Yeah.
Just didn't make a lot of sense on their end, but maybe the market just really wasn't there.
Well, they've got – I don't know how they're going to distribute the minutes now. I mean, Noah's out a handful of games early on. You'd assume Hernan Gomez starts and Kanter just becomes that bull in the China shop off the bench. Same sort of role he had in OKC.
Yeah, I guess that kind of makes sense. You know, part of it maybe, you know, you had the news coming down you know, a couple of days ago that Russ Westbrook might miss the first little bit of training camp, getting an injection in his knee. So maybe that – having, you know, Carmelo on the team now kind of eases them, not having to rush him back near as much. You know, preseason really doesn't mean anything to him, so he just needs to get rest and get right. But, you know, looking into the season, how do you see the addition of Carmelo Anthony, you know, affecting, you know, Russell Westbrook and then another guy that joined them this offseason and Paul George?
I don't think it's going to affect Russ too much. The guy who's going to get affected is definitely Carmelo. He's going to be the third banana, probably. Well, this will be for the first time in his career, apart from the USA games. Even then, he was still kind of the alpha dog scorer. I think he's going to get a lot of open shots. George is obviously a good ball handler in the perimeter. Russ is Russ. He just is a freak. I mean, when I saw the news about the procedure, I was kind of envisioning the Terminator scene where he fixes his eye and then he goes back in and just lights up the police station. It's going to be the same sort of thing. He might be out a couple of days, but he's not going to miss any chunk of the season. If anything, it's going to help Melo, you know, acclimatize to that situation. I'm interested what's going to happen with sort of Patrick Patterson. He was a nice low-key signing. What happens to him now? I guess he goes to the bench.
Yeah, I mean, I think that probably makes the most sense unless, you know, they're planning on maybe running out Paul George at the two. Carmelo is kind of a three, and then running them with Patrick Patterson. I mean, you just look at like their bench now, and they really, really don't have a lot. So maybe they would be better off running him off the bench. You know, we got Raymond Felton and Alex Abrines there in the backcourt. I mean, Kyle Singler, Jeremy Grant, Dakari Johnson. There's not a ton really going there.
No.
But I think you're pretty much right in what you said. Like, I don't think it affects Russ much. I think you'll just kind of see kind of what happened with, you know, KD and Curry when instead of being, you know, number one, number two in fantasy, they drop back maybe into like that 6 to 8 range just because they all kind of eat at each other a little bit. You know, same with Paul George. He may drop back a few spots, but they're still going to be the main guys there. So let's go ahead and transition now into what's going to make up the meat of this podcast today. We both have recently put out our rankings. You put out, you know, your Roto rankings, and I have my head-to-head contending rankings, and we're just kind of going to compare them and contrast them a little bit, you know, talk about a few guys I'm higher on and a few guys that you're higher on. And so we'll just, you know, jump right into it. As I mentioned, you know, his are for Roto, mine are for head-to-head, so that'll make up a little bit of the difference. But the first guy we had some difference on was Blake Griffin. He came in at 19th on my contending rankings, and you have him at 28. So you have him a little bit lower. I have a feeling it's probably, you know, I'm just assuming you're planning on him missing, you know, 15, 20 games and that dropping him a little bit. Is that right? Or why are you just, you know, like about a round later on him?
Yeah, that's exactly right. I own him in a dynasty league where we keep 7 players. Start of last year, I was really, really happy going forward. I had Boogie Cousins, Mike Conley, Isaiah Thomas, Blake Griffin as my core. And Conley went down. I traded him away for Vucevic. Because, you know, a guy has a broken back, you don't think he's going to be back in 3 weeks. And yet Conley did and had a career year. So that wasn't ideal for me. Griffin, I'm just sick of him missing chunks of games. Like, I had one little quick look online for some stats. The main stat that scares me is he has missed 83 games over the last three seasons, which when you think of a guy like Danilo Gallinari, his new Clippers teammate, you think he's injury prone. He's actually missed less games than Blake has over the last three seasons.
Wow.
Which is surprising.
That is very surprising. And, you know, I guess maybe, you know, that plays in more roto and, like, you know, the roto setting. For me, if I own him in a head-to-head league, you know, you understand he's going to miss some games. Hopefully you have an IR spot so you can pick up someone else just to kind of stream in, or hope you have some decent options on your bench. But I just think that when he does play, he's going to provide you, you know, such an advantage. I think he's the guy you saw last year averaged just under 5 assists per game.
Yeah.
Now they take away Chris Paul, you know, Patrick Beverley, he's a solid guy. He'll play a nice role there. You know, Milos Teodosic is, you know, apparently the best passer in the league already, according to some of the players out there.
Yeah.
But I still think you're going to see a lot of the offense ran through him at kind of in that point forward role a little bit. So I think the fact that he could, you know, get you, you know, five and a half assists from the power forward position has a lot of value.
Yeah.
Obviously, he's going to be a beast, you know, scoring and rebounding the ball. You know, you just hope, you know, it's not, you know, not likely going into his age 28 season, but hopefully, you know, he can get up above that one, get to 1.25 steals, just kind of really round out his game.
Yeah, see, that's what my concern is in Roto. He doesn't average a three, he doesn't average a steal, he doesn't average a block, and he's only okay at free throw percentage. I think he's about 76 last year, which was probably a career high. So when you're below, you're either at average in free throw percentage or you're below in the three other cats. Roto, it's kind of hard to build on that. It means you have to look for specialists later who aren't going to sink you in the categories. Blake is also weakened. So I think I like him more in head-to-head because, as you said, you can lock him in for elite points, rebounds, assists, and field goal percentage, and then hope that he has a week where he averages, you know, 1.2 steals or he has a three a game. And he's easier to build around in head-to-head than he is Roto, I think.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right there. So if you were going to, you know, set the over-under on games played for Blake Griffin, where do you think he's going to come in at?
I would go with about 65.
Yeah, see, so I think with him, you're hoping, you know, best case you're getting, you know, closer to that 70, 72. But I think 65 is probably a pretty good guess for, like, an over-under on him.
Yeah.
So let's go ahead and, you know, we don't want to belabor on any of these players, you know, too long. So we'll just kind of keep rapid-fire going through. Moving over to Minnesota, a guy that I think a lot of people are down on just because of, you know, they added a top 10 player in Jimmy Butler. But that's Andrew Wiggins. I have him at 23rd in my contending ranking. You have him coming in at 38th in my rebuilding rank. So I do have Wiggins up there as 11th. So he's a guy I like even more if you're a team that's, you know, playing for 3 to 5 years down the road. You know, this is a guy we got, you know, almost, you know, 15 spots different on. Is the addition of Jimmy Butler, just that just scare you off of him, you know, that much? Or why are you just, you know, a little bit lower on him?
I actually really like watching him, and I think he's a good player. I just think he's better in reality than he is fantasy. He reminds me of kind of a Corey McGiddy, maybe not in the style, but of the fantasy stats he puts up. And McGiddy only really hit peak value when he was hitting, you know, 85% on 10 attempts from the line and close to a three a game. So unless Wiggins sort of becomes DeRozan, so he hits, you know, elite free throw percentage and increases his assists, I just don't see him getting any better in fantasy. The threes are, I think he averaged just over one a game, and his field goal percentage suffered when he started hitting threes. He has one of the worst steal rates of all time for a guy who's played 36 minutes. I'm going to be one of those dicks who does the custom filter on Basketball Reference and looks it up. So there are 11 players in NBA history who have played at least 240 games and averaged 35 minutes a game and averaged a steal a game or less. So Wiggins is on there. Ironically, with Blake Griffin and Carmelo Anthony, who we just talked about. But he's also up there with guys like Allen Houston, Jamal Mashburn, Brandon Roy, Anthony Mason, rest in peace, Damian Lillard. So there's guys on there who those other guys had stats to back up their inefficiencies. So, you know, you had Roy averaging 5 to 6 assists a game, plus elite free throws, plus elite points. You had Allen Houston averaging massive three-pointers with elite free throw percentage. I just don't see Wiggins increasing either his assists or his threes or his steals enough to sort of leap into that top 25, top 30, or even, you know, you've got him rebuilding 11th. So in 3 to 5 years' time, what stat line do you have him doing?
I mean, I think he can really play off of Jimmy Butler well. I think he's a good guy to kind of play under, not necessarily under, but play with for a few years. You know, as Jimmy kind of ages in there, I think there's a lot of room for Wiggins to grow. You know, he's still very, very young. I'm only 22 years old, turning 23 this year.
Yep.
You know, he's been in the league 3 years, so he, you know, it's not like he's, you know, fresh out of college. You know, he's had a little bit of time to adjust. But you know, look at his stats last year. You know, 23 points, 4 rebounds, 2 assists. I think there is room for those all to go up. Obviously, Towns is a guy that down the road is going to be the number one option there. But I do think Wiggins can maybe get up closer to, you know, 25, 26 points per game, which, you know, that's still fairly elite in a category that you have to draft early, because when you get later in the draft, there's not a lot of high points guys. I do think that, you know, you'll see him eventually shift more through the lineup. I think that he's the guy that as he gets older can play a little bit of a small ball four. Hopefully, as, you know, he keeps extending his range a little bit, becomes more of a threat on the 3-point line. And obviously, you know, the steals have one per game. You know, that list you mentioned, that's not great company, but he is a very good defensive player. Like you said, maybe better in real basketball, but I think a lot of times with guys that have just this much talent that eventually the cream rises to the top and those stat lines kind of round out to that real life potential. So I'm hoping that he can get up closer to that 1.25, 1 point, you know, 3-4 steals per game during his prime years. I find that I tend to lean towards youth over the older veterans in dynasty leagues.
Yeah.
And so I'm okay taking a guy and waiting on him for, you know, 2-3 years and being patient with him. You know, it's not a lot of guys, you know, it's not a lot of people's style, so you kind of have to be able to stomach some of those growing pains. But he is a guy that in a dynasty league I would still give up a fairly good decent amount to go acquire.
I'm just not really convinced on Wiggins. Because, I mean, let's say in 2-3 years' time, you'd assume Butler is still there and you'd assume Towns is dominating the league like prime Kareem. So how many points does that leave for Wiggins to get? Is he going to be like Klay Thompson as the third option, averaging, you know, 21, 22 a game? Because Klay relies on those three-pointers, whereas Wiggins doesn't. There's not going to be that room to operate inside and slash. And he's basically going to be getting sort of dump-offs and putbacks and, you know, I don't think his jump shot's reliable enough to see him get to 24, 25 points a game unless he develops that 3-point shot.
I mean, yeah, that really comes down to what you're banking on the offensive side. You know, he's already, you know, a pretty good player in that slasher role.
Yeah, he is.
You just hope that he can eventually step out and add a little bit more range. That way it rounds out his game a little bit more. So let's go ahead and head, you know, up north, I guess. Wiggins is actually from Canada. Let's move to a guy that's actually playing there. He's a guy that I found just, you know, interacting on Twitter and Reddit that I seem to be much, much higher on than the pool. So I'm not surprised that I'm about 20 spots higher on him than you are. And that's Jonas Valanciunas. He comes in at 39 on my rebuild rankings. He comes in at 59 for you. I guess for me, it's something I figured you'd almost value more in Roto with those very, very good percentages. You know, last year, 55% from the field, 57% or 81% from the free throw line. Obviously, the rest of the stat line leaves a lot to be desired. But he's a guy that, I mean, when I watch him play, there's just, you know, he's a little bit slow-footed. He doesn't necessarily fit the modern NBA. But I think he's a very good basketball player, and I feel like he's very misutilized or underutilized in Canada with Dwayne Casey. So I still think there's a lot of room for him to grow. Obviously, you know, hope he can get up closer to, you know, 1.5 blocks. I think he could be a decent rim protector. He just really doesn't get a ton of minutes, doesn't get a chance to get in a groove. But I guess that, you know, that's my spiel on Jonas. I still like him a lot. Where do you kind of come in on him?
Yeah, I agree with all the positive stuff you said, but I am really concerned about his role in Toronto. I mean, you've got Lowry, you've got DeRozan. Norm Powell is probably going to average probably more points than Valanciunas this year. I mean, Valanciunas only played 26 minutes a game last year, which is the same stat he's played the last three seasons. I'm also on, you know, Basketball Reference again, shout out. And there's not a lot to look there. As soon as you get past rebounds, you've got 0.7 assists, 0.5 steals, 0.8 blocks. And then the 1.3 turnovers is nice, but if you're playing in a category, in a assist to turnover league, for example, that 0.7 assists is absolutely brutal, and it can't be hidden, and neither can the 0.3s. So the percentages are great. I actually drafted him in one of my dynasty leagues. I think it was about the 9th round pick. So I got Boogie Cousins, and I figured
that's excellent value.
I figured he'd be a good sort of pairing with Boogie as my other center, because his Boogie's, you know, field goal percentage is plummeting with the more threes he's taking, and he also has a healthy number of steals, assists, and threes. So pairing him with a guy like Valanciunas is sort of gravy in there. But I don't think Valanciunas has that much growth remaining in Toronto. As you said, he's limited by Casey. He's limited by the style they play. I think if you put him with a pass-first point guard like Rubio or Wall, you know, he'd be a Gortat kind of guy. He'd be up to 14, 15 points a game, 10, 11 rebounds. I mean, his per 36s are pretty good. I mean, what's he got here? 17 points, 13 rebounds. So he's obviously an elite rebounder, but the block shots last year was tied with his career worst, 1.1 blocks per 36 minutes. So not a lot of growth there in 5 years.
Yeah, I totally can see what you're saying there. He's a guy that a couple years ago when he signed, you know, that four-year extension, you know, I was excited. I'm like, oh, man, they're finally going to unleash him. It's time.
Yeah.
And that just really hasn't came to fruition yet. You know, you add Serge Ibaka there, and then it, you know, even further takes away from that. I guess he's a guy that maybe I'm hoping you know, if you don't own him in the league right now, maybe midseason, if you can buy low on him a little bit and then, you know, hold out hope that they finally move him at the trade deadline. You know, he was in rumors all last season and in the offseason.
Yeah.
It seems like they were pretty much ready to give up on him. And I do think that, like you said, if he gets paired with a better, not necessarily a better, but a point guard that suits his style more, there is a little bit of room that, or, you know, there's still a lot of room that he has to grow there. Obviously, the big number you're hoping is comes up is the blocks. And I think just, you know, getting a more consistent role and more minutes, that should come up naturally, just because I don't think he's a bad defender by any
means. No, I mean, as you said, though, he's a bit slow-footed. And Serge Ibaka is the ideal modern center. So I think you can definitely see Toronto going smaller. They've also got Nogueira, who I really like. Now, he's a real rim protector. So if they end up moving Valanciunas, I think Nogueira probably slots in as a starting center there.
Yeah, that probably sounds right. So let's go ahead and move on to our next guy. And not a big surprise that these have a big discrepancy in our rankings. When we're talking about a guy like Andre Drummond, obviously, you know, the story with him, you know, 38% from the free throw line. In a roto league, that's going to tank you. So I guess instead of talking about what a lot of people already know, could you just maybe give a little insight on, you know, if you do end up with a guy, you know, great value in a draft like Andre Drummond in a roto league, what are some of the other guys you're going to be looking at, you know, later on in the draft to pair with him to try and still help be competitive with a guy like
him? I don't think you actually can be competitive with him. Like, I share this with a few guys, a couple of guys from Basketball Monster, Matt and Josh. I think they both agree, in roto, you actually can't win a league with Andre Drummond unless you're getting, say, Durant in the first round or Harden in the first round and then managing to get DeRozan and Gallinari. But if you take those guys, you're also shortfalling yourself in assists, steals, blocks. Even, I mean, Drummond, last 16 games of the season, only averaged 0.9 blocks a game. So, and he shot 25% from the line at 3.5 attempts. So you can't hide that. It's, you know, I've done some crunching on stats in the previous years, and to hide a guy like Drummond or DeAndre Jordan, you essentially have to have, you know, 40 out of 45 total free throw percentage when you add them in just to get to 80%. And even then, 80% is not necessarily going to win you a free throw percentage in roto.
Yeah, that can have you more middle of the league at times.
Yeah.
And so I guess, you know, that's definitely a guy that, not surprisingly, he's easier to build around in a head-to-head sense.
He's a beast in head-to-head.
You punt that free throw percentage every single week, and then you just, you know, you enjoy that one block, one steal, and then even, you know, a little bit over one assist per game, you know, with the elite rebounding, you know, great field goal percentage. There's a couple guys that fall kind of in this mold, you know, DeAndre Jordan, you mentioned, Dwight Howard is another guy that's getting up there kind of towards the end of his career arc, but he's still a guy that puts up similar stat lines to this. I think Clint Capella to a lesser extent. Yeah. So is your general strategy in your drafts just to avoid these guys altogether in a roto league, no matter how far they slide?
Yeah, unless I can work out that I've got 85% free throws, you know, 60 out of 65 as a total, I'd maybe add Howard or Drummond. I couldn't add DeAndre. I think he has the most attempts out of them. But even last year, Drummond knew his weakness. He only averaged 4.5 a game attempts. So that's probably why his scoring dropped so much. I think he's a lot like Jonas, except Jonas makes his free throws.
Yeah, that makes sense. He's a guy that I think, you know, for the head-to-head leagues, he's a guy that I do like quite a bit. And I think he has a fairly, you know, cemented role where he's going to have a chance to, you know, produce at least like this for the rest of his contract. Because you know, I think he almost has a borderline untradeable contract because that free throw percentage is so bad you can't even play him in the fourth quarter a lot of times. But he, even in three quarters of play, he's going to grab, you know, 15 rebounds and 12 points just off putbacks. So I think that, you know, what you do get from him in head-to-head leagues is, you know, one of the safer options for the big man out there. You know, he's still young, so you still hold out hope that maybe he goes underhanded with the free throws and gets up to 50%, and then you're looking at a guy that's an all-star potentially.
Yeah, I mean,
but let's go ahead and go ahead.
I was going to say, I mean, you'd like a hypothetical trade, something like Drummond to the Lakers for Brook Lopez, because if you compare him with a guy like Lonzo Ball, who I would assume from looking at video and hearing everything else, who can actually set up teammates. A guy like Drummond would benefit so much from having a pass-first guy rather than someone like Reggie Jackson or, you know, Langston Galloway. Ish Smith is a good pass-first point guard, but he's obviously restricted by his poor shooting as well. So I think a change of scenery might be the thing for Drummond. But as you said, that contract is nearly untradeable.
Yeah, there's not a lot of teams that could really take on that. You know, Chicago is one of the few teams in the league that has a lot of cap space, but I'm not even sure he's the type of guy you want to rebuild around, even if you can get him. Not many other teams can even afford to bring him on the books right now without, you know, paying a huge tax. Let's go ahead and move on to our next guy here, and that's Drew Holiday. He checks in at 53 for me and 66 for you. So we're getting a little bit, you know, towards what would be, I guess, the mid-round draft range in our picks. Or in our rankings, excuse me. Like I said, it's late here, so I'm probably sounding a little crazy.
No, that's right, man.
But last year, Drew Holiday comes in, averages, you know, 15.7 assists, just under 4 rebounds, and 1.5 three-pointers, 1.5 steals. Really a guy that if you drafted him, he outperformed your draft expectations a lot. He probably helped carry a lot of teams to the playoffs. You know, 66 isn't a bad rank. I'm assuming that probably just is assuming a little bit of the assist numbers go down now with the addition of Rajon Rondo.
Exactly right. And also another guy who sneakily misses a hell of a lot of games. Obviously last year, well, I think it was last year, with his wife. It was very sad. But he missed very 15 games last year, 17 before that, 42 the year before that, 48 the year before that. So he has missed a huge chunk of games. Last year was a career high in threes as well as field goal percentage, career low in free throw percentage, which is a bit of a concern. And as you said, Rondo aboard is really going to probably take 2, maybe even 2.5 assists off his game, because Rondo, you know, you can leave Rondo open. Drew Holiday, at least, you know, a decent three-point shooter.
Yeah, that makes sense. I guess the way I'm looking at it, I think there's a Rajon Rondo could be useful for an NBA team. I can't imagine taking the ball out of Drew Holiday's hands that much. I still think he's the best player on the perimeter there by far. And if they're smart, they're still going to run everything through him and maybe bring Rondo off the bench. I don't necessarily think that's going to happen, but that's what they should be doing.
I don't necessarily think they're smart. You know, I mean, look, they signed Solomon Hill with that ridiculous deal, you know, and then they signed Rajon Rondo. I don't get them.
They might have the worst team, like at least the worst perimeter players easily in the league, especially you take away Drew Holiday. It's ugly there. I guess, you know, the one good thing about maybe having Rondo there is it takes the ball, you know, maybe a little bit, hopefully not too much out of Holiday's hands, and maybe that helps keep him upright so he's not missing as many games as you previously mentioned. But, I mean, really, you just hope that he can stay healthy, because even if his assists drop, you know, 5, 6 assists, he's still a guy that's going to outperform his draft slot in a lot of leagues, I would imagine. They're going to be doing everything they can to try and make the playoffs so they can try and bring Boogie back without having to trade him at the deadline. So I think they're going to do everything they can to be competitive. I think if you have Drew Holiday this year, you're going to be very happy with your returns on him, and he's going to put up a lot of good numbers, and he's going to have some weeks where he really cares.
Whereabouts do you have him in rebuilding?
I'm not sure 100% off the top of my head. Let me pull that up real quick.
Just putting you on the spot there.
No problem. Well, I had it in the links, but I didn't bring that link over on my notes. Let me get this pulled up just real quick here. Keep going on just the Pelicans real quick while I'm pulling this up. Where do you see them as a team that challenges for an eighth spot in the West, or do you think that they're outside the window?
They should. I just don't think they can. I mean, there's no shooters on that team. They let guy Omri Caspi go, who is a sneaky good player, and no surprises the Warriors pick him up straight away. So I don't know why you sign a guy like Solomon Hill, who had proven nothing in Indiana, apart from potentially being a small ball four, and you know, then you go out and get Cousins and just have nothing to put next to him. They've already got Davis, who should be a transcendent star.
I guess the one thing you can say good about them is that they are, you know, doing everything they can to put a competitive team and try and keep those guys. But to answer your question, Jrue Holiday, I have him at number 63 in my rebuilding ranks. My comment on him, not a guy I'm huge on in a rebuild, sketchy injury past, more valuable to a contending team, which I think sums it up, and I stand by that statement.
100%. Yeah, that's exactly what you said in the rankings. So that sounds about right.
All right, so we'll go ahead and move on to our next guy. Another guy that it seems like I'm quite a bit higher on, and I think it's maybe more just kind of that personal eye test where I see a lot of things I like, and that's Julius Randle. I have him coming in at 73. You have him at 91, so that's quite a bit of a discrepancy there. So I'll go ahead and let you start. You know, what has you just a little bit lower on Randle?
I actually just really like Larry Nance. I think he's a better fit for that Lakers team. Randle is too short to play center. Nance, I think, could play a small ball center for stretches. He doesn't have 3-point range. He's a career 27% three-point shooter. Good, had a really, really good passing year last year. I think the assists were, where are we? So double what he had the year before, but his rebounds also dropped by 1.6. So I just think he's got a very limited ceiling, and much like Valanciunas and Drummond, he's kind of an old school guy. He's not, he would have fit perfectly in the 90s, banging against Oakley and Barkley and these sorts of guys. I just think now a stretch four will be able to just take him out of the paint, and that's why his rebounds are dropping.
Yeah, that makes sense. I guess for me, it's just a guy that I think when you add a point guard like Lonzo Ball, he makes everyone around him better, and I think you're going to see that right away. I wish I could remember the exact stat, but it was I want to say Julius Randle was in the top 20 percentile of players scoring buckets in transition his rookie year, and I think you add a guy like Lonzo Ball that's going to want to push the tempo, and I think that really plays to his strength. So I think there's room for his points to score a little or to go up a little bit. I'm with you. I like Larry Nance a lot too. I think that he definitely carves out a big role for this team as they, you know, eventually transition to becoming a competitive team. Randall's not a guy I ever really imagine averaging close to one block per game, which is you know, easier to overcome in a head-to-head league than Roto. But I do think that he could push up closer to, you know, a little bit closer to that one per game steal mark. You know, eventually maybe step out, be able to hit half a three-pointer per game. You know, you even got guys like Pau Gasol stepping out, hitting over a three per game, shooting over 50% from deep. So you hope as he ages, you know, he could do that. He's still only 22 years old. So I just think there's a lot of room for him to grow in this Lakers system. I like Luke Walton as a coach. Obviously, if you haven't picked up, I'm big on Lonzo Ball. So I still think there's some room there for Randle to grow and really outperform his draft slot in a lot of your
I guess from a Roto perspective, I just think he's got too many holes where you're going to have to find guys who excel in those cats. Because, I mean, Roto, you don't have to win every league. You just have to avoid last in any. So 0.2 threes for his career, 72% free throw for his career on 3.6 attempts, 0.7 steals, 0.4 blocks, 2.1 turnovers. So those turnovers are far too high for a guy who really doesn't give you anything else in steals, blocks, threes, and he's got below average free throw percentage. There's too many holes there where you have to find guys later on in the draft or have, you know, the most balanced team in the league, which is, you know, you're relying on a perfect draft for that to happen.
No, well, you don't do that every single year?
Probably once in the last 5 years, maybe. Yeah.
That's better than me, I think. So let's go ahead and move on to our last guy here, at least on my side of the list, and that's maybe a little bit of homerism on my side or wishful thinking, I guess, and that's Nikola Jokic. Checks in at 84 for me, all the way down at 120 for you. And I guess for me, where this ranking comes in at 84, that's just assuming that he's back in Chicago on a one-year qualifying offer. And I think that if Chicago's smart, they will run the majority of the offense through him, and they will let him, you know, win some games or shoot him out of some games or shoot the team out of some games. Last year, he just under 2 3-pointers. I think that could clip up closer to 2, 2.5 if they put him in a featured role. He's a guy that I really just feel like has been misutilized. You know, he's a better defender than a lot of people give him credit for, you know, 0.8 steals and 0.8 blocks per game. I think if you give him more than 24 minutes a game, those could both creep up closer to 1, 1.25. There's a guy that I think has a lot of untapped potential and a really high ceiling that hasn't even came close to hitting. You know, maybe that's just, you know, fool's gold for me as a Bulls fan, you know, wanting and hoping for the best. But I think 120 is definitely too low, and I think he'll definitely perform better than that. But I'll let you go ahead and defend your
120 is too low. He really pissed me off the last two seasons. I wrote a big spiel about him on when I was writing for the Fantasy Fix. I looked up some stats that he put up in his rookie year. He's actually the only rookie in NBA history to put up per 36s with at least two threes, 1.2 steals, and 1.2 blocks per 36 minutes, along with 18 points and 8 rebounds. So when I looked at that, I thought, this guy's going to be an absolute beast. Chicago's going to unleash him. And they tried to at times, you know, for a week or two, you'd think he's the best player on the Bulls. But the per 36s have dropped across the board. Field goal percentages stayed around 41%. I love the free throw percentage, 80% for his career for a big guy. There's a lot to like there. But your key word that you used there was Chicago will be smart to use him that way. Do you really think Garpax is going to use him that way after just drafting Lauri Markkanen?
No, I mean, I think that they will. I think that Hoiberg is coaching for his job this year, and if he has any hope of keeping it, that's what he'll do. So I'm hoping that this is finally the year that some things click. I mean, you know, he's proven me completely wrong in the past, so I can't say that with much confidence. But I do see him getting more than 24 minutes per game if he comes back this year, which I think just by default, he's a good enough player that he'll fill up the stat sheet a little bit more. The field goal percentage may hurt you, so that's definitely a plus in head-to-head where you can just pump that if you build around that. He's a guy that I would still take a chance on. You can get him probably later than 84 in your draft, so I'm definitely okay getting that. You could probably get him closer to that 100, 120 mark. But, you know, say he is back in Chicago. I think even if they misuse him a little bit, he improves on that 10.5 points, 5.5 rebounds. Where do you kind of see, like, if you're going to put his floor, you know, if you say he gets 28 minutes per game this year, where do you kind of see?
If he gets 28 minutes, he's probably 14, 15 points, 6.5, 7 rebounds, which is useful. That's, you know, Tobias Harris is about 14, 15, 16 points plus, you know, around 7 rebounds. It's the three-pointers that are, you know, elite. And if he can get to, you know, one steal, one block, then he has an easy chance to crack, you know, top 75. I'm just concerned about Chicago. They've got, you know, Bobby Portis, who I was really high on in Dynasty, but he doesn't seem to be ever showing anything. He had, you know, that huge summer league last year, and then nothing happened this year. And then you've got, you know, Lauri Markkanen, who's, you know, absolutely crushed it in Euro. You'd have to think he's going to be a focal point at some point this year, whether it's, you know, halfway through the season or if it's right off the bat. And the other concern with Mirotić is what, why does Chicago want to give him 30 minutes a game and have him potentially develop? Because as a free agent this year, you'd think they would have, you know, re-upped if they had that much confidence in him. Instead, they draft a guy who basically plays the exact same position. So why would they play him, you know, 30 minutes over Markkanen is my concern if I draft him.
I think the answer to that is just because he was, you know, one of Garpax's love child after Derrick Rose. Like, he was supposed to be the next, you know, heir to the throne in a sense. So I think that this, you know, maybe, you know, they encourage Hoiberg, you know, a little backroom meetings, you know, get him more minutes. So, you know, and even if he does leave Chicago after this year, you know, for Dynasty League, he's a guy that I think could potentially have more value in another situation. He's a guy in Dynasty I think that you can really buy low on, and you can hopefully get some returns on that, if not this year, in the very near future. But let's go ahead and switch over to the other side now, some guys that I'm low on, so you can kind of put me on the hot seat instead of me kind of grilling you about all these guys. And we'll start off with one guy in D'Angelo Russell. Here you have him at 30. I have him down at 43, 17 in my rebuild rank, so I think he's a guy that on a younger squad we both really like a lot. But I'll go ahead and let you start off here. You got him, you know, top 30, which would I think, you know, a little bit of a bold call, but I like it. So you must be big on the move to Brooklyn. So just
Gosh, Sean Marks, the Kiwi GM, sort of traded for him. I think he's got some faith in him. He comes from that Spurs background. It wouldn't have been just a Brook Lopez salary dump. That was, you know, used to get a star or someone they think can be a star. I have to think Marks would have done his research. You look at the numbers from Russell in his second year. 2 threes a game, 78% from the line, 4.8 assists, 1.4 steals, you know, 16 points in 29 minutes. He can easily improve on that. The thing with fantasy that I really like is you can have a good player on a shit team and you can share for them. They don't have to be good players on good teams. There's nothing wrong with, you know, getting a guy like you know, prime Monte Ellis, the most selfish player, you know, on a team. I don't mind those sorts of guys. You know, I think Russell has upside, and I think the Nets are going to run through him. They have no reason to tank. I mean, they don't have their pick. Jeremy Lin will be a good calming guy next to him. I guess my question to you is, why do you have him at only 43?
So for me, it's not as much down on him because I do like him a lot. It's just more of some of the guys that I have ahead of him that I like more. You know, just going over the list, if I'm on a contending team, number 42 right ahead of him, Chris Paul. I think we both rather have him on
the contending team. Yeah, I think he's too low there.
Eric Bledsoe. That's another argument, I guess. Eric Bledsoe, I have him at 41 due to a little bit of durability concerns, but I do think if you're a team that's competing for a championship, which, you know, I guess for a little bit more clarification, my contending ranks are for a team that's championship window is the upcoming season and the next one, with a little bit less of a focus on years 3 and plus down the road. But let's keep moving up that list. You know, Andre Drummond, we already talked about him where he's got his build. We build around him, right, and he's definitely got his strength. Number 39, Jonas Valanciunas. I think you would probably have him above there, and I guess we already kind of talked about that. You know, moving up from there, Chris Middleton. I think he's one of the most underrated guys in fantasy, and he can fit alongside anyone. Where do you come in?
I love Middleton. I think he's a perfect roto guy. He's only going to get better. He's still relatively young. Came back really well from the injury. He could be a guy who, you know, he might not average 20. He might not average 5, you know, 5 assists, but he'll average, you know, a really high free throw percentage, elite steals, you know, relatively low turnovers, and really good three-point shooting. That's the sort of guy you want in roto, is someone who's not going to be a cat killer. You don't want someone who could butcher your field goal percentage. I mean, I freely admit Russell might shoot 40% this year, but I think there's enough stats across the board. He's a good rebounder for a guy his size. Those threes will be high. The free throw percentage will be relatively high. So unless you're playing 9 cat, because I think he's going to average probably close to 4 turnovers a game, potentially, depending how much ball handling he shares with Lin. Russell's a guy I want in the sort of second or third round. Maybe not second. Second round's probably too high. But start of the third, middle of the third, that's where I'm going to try and get someone like him. And I'd probably go upside over Middleton, to be honest.
Okay, yeah, that's fair. So, yeah, I guess for me, it's not as much of a low on Russell. Just I like some of the guys I have ranked slightly ahead of him. I think you're right on the money. I think there's a chance that he averages near 4 turnovers a game, and you know that field goal percentage could hurt you. So that's, I guess, maybe another reason why I have him a little bit lower. I really don't mind guys that you punt, you know, one category of, but he's a guy that really could hurt you in 2 of them. I hope he comes up a little bit from 40%. I don't think it's unrealistic to, you know, maybe hope for, you know, closer to 42%, just as he grows a little bit. You know, he's still extremely, extremely young. But he's a guy that, yeah, got 17 in my rebuild ranking. So I think he has a very bright future. The Nets have been making some great moves, honestly. Like, they get a lot of jokes, but they're not the same Nets that traded away their future.
No, but who do they have starting at center?
They've been making, I mean, I guess who's the rookie they drafted? Yeah. Jared Allen. I mean, I guess him when he comes back. I don't even know if he's healthy yet, though.
I'm sure they just signed someone.
Let's pull up their depth chart. They got Mozgov. Yeah, Mozgov. They just signed Tyler Zeller too, so maybe he eats up some of the backup minutes, I guess there. But so let's kind of move on here. Next guy, Devin Booker. I think maybe a little homerism on your side here.
Oh, no doubt about it.
You have him at 33, so 3 spots behind Russell. I have him down at 45. So these are both guys that we just have a little bit difference. But, you know, before anyone, you know, accuses me of being a Devin Booker hater, I have him at number 10 in my rebuilding rankings. So I do agree that the future is bright for him. I don't know that he does enough for a contending team now to really, you know, especially at 33. That seems very aggressive. But hey, sell me on him right now. Let's
and we're going to come back to you having him at 10. I don't even know if I have him that high in 2 or 3 years' time. I guess take away that 70-point game, and there's a bit of gloss taken off his season. His scoring average probably drops by half a game. But, you know, for a guy who's only 20, and everyone can say, he's only 19 or 20, but you can't ignore the fact that he is so young. His body hasn't matured yet. He's been playing on an absolutely crap team the last 2 seasons, probably been expected to take on a bigger load than what he should be doing. But I really, really like some of the things I see. You know, 2 threes a game, 83% free throw on nearly 6 attempts a game. The 3.5 assists is good, nearly a steal a game, and 22 points a game. As you said earlier, it's really hard to find a guy with those sorts of points. So I think his upside – Even this year could be a guy like DeRozan, but with a three-point shot. So he won't have the steals. A field goal percentage won't be elite, but he'll have really good free throw percentage, solid assists, really high points as well.
Yeah, as long as he can stay near that one steal per game mark, the rest of his game, I think, will either maintain or grow enough that you can really look past that and, you know, get past that as, you know, a guard that doesn't get you a ton of steals. And like, you know, you mentioned it, he's 20 years old still. Exactly. The guy can't even legally buy a beer yet, and he's already averaging 22 points a game in the NBA. I think, you know, the ceiling for this kid really is limitless. You know, you talk to, but you read the interviews of a lot of the NBA players.
Yeah.
They all think this kid has next, and they all talk about how he's just a bulldog. And I, you know, game recognized game, you know, already averaging 22 points, three boards, three assists. I do think that those numbers come up quite a bit. And so we're having a 10 in my rebuild ranks. I think that he's a guy that really does have future to be a game changer, you know, one of those guys that is really an elite fantasy player, especially if he can, you know, get closer to that 2.5, 3 pointers per game and then eventually get those steals up to 1, 1.25. I think that's a guy that with the rest of his stat line, you know, even now 42%, that's not totally killer as your field goal percentage. Exactly. And I think that even has room to come up.
Limitless. I do like the three turnovers again last year was pretty bad, but he played a lot of point guard when Eric Bledsoe was shut down. I won't say hurt.
when they pulled their
own version. Terrible. It was tough to watch. I mean, I'm a Suns fan, and I've gone through some shit over these years. Let me tell you that. So, but last year was brutal. I guess playing with Ulis, I think Ulis might miss a bit of time this year, and I just don't think he's as efficient as he. I mean, he definitely wasn't efficient over those last few weeks. The field goal percentage was absolutely horrific. But he was a good. He was more of a daily fantasy guy than a roto league sort of only sort of player. I don't think Ulis has the upside. So I guess it depends now what the Suns do with Bledsoe, because if Bledsoe's dealt, I could definitely see Booker getting up to 5 or 6 assists a game, like Kobe did back in the day, you know, averaging a lot of those points running point when the second unit was in.
Yeah, I think that that's kind of what – I think if they're smart, that's what they'll do. I think Bledsoe's a very good player, but I don't know that – you know, he's still young, so I guess he could fit the timeline. But I think that you really unlock a lot more of, you know, Devin Booker, who is their franchise guy. I think you unlock a lot more of his potential running him at some of those minutes in the point guard spot. Yeah, love this kid. Love him a lot. So I can't really. I guess maybe I'm too low on him at 45.
No, but I mean, let's say you have you do have him at 10. What in 3 years time, what do you think his stat line looks like?
So I think that, you know, like you said, I'm not really banking on Eric Bledsoe still being there. So I'm assuming those assist numbers come up quite a bit. Not maybe quite a bit, but a decent amount. So, you know, right now, you said 3 years time from here. So he'll be what, 23 years old, not even quite coming into his prime yet. I don't think it's unrealistic to think, you know, 25, 26 points per game, you know, 1, 1.25 steals, 4.5 assists, 4.5 rebounds, 2.5 threes on the conservative end there. And I think, you know, still shooting around 85% from the free throw line, and hopefully at that point shooting closer to that 45% field goal percentage. I think the turnovers will stay high, so he might be a guy that actually that number goes up the more he has the ball in his hands. So that may get up closer to that 4 or 4.5, but he's the guy that I would just take punt turnovers.
Exactly. And if you're playing 8-cap roto, you don't care about turnovers anyway. I mean, those numbers are kind of like, you know, prime Ray Allen, Michael Redd kind of numbers. If he can get that field goal percentage up over 45, then he definitely is going to be a top 10 guy in a couple of years' time.
And it's just hard to say because he is so young. There's such a wide array of outcomes that could happen. But the fact he's already shown such flashes of dominance at such a young age, I'm willing to go all in and bet on that youth and upside. And then, you know, maybe that's one of the guys that comes back and bites me. But he's a guy that I like quite a bit, and I would give up a lot in my dynasty to go after and get. Okay, so let's go ahead and move out to the West Coast a little bit closer to where I'm at, head down to Los Angeles. Talk about Brandon Ingram here, another guy that I think – just kind of contending to rebuilding when I'm looking at him on my side. You have him at 40. I have him down at 52 for my contending, 16 in my rebuild. I just don't see any way he returns anything close to, you know, 40th value overall. I think he long-term is the guy there, but I think he's still got a lot of room or a lot of time left before he can really develop into that player. So are you banking on a big big step up this year? Or are you just kind of betting on the potential?
I think both. I think he definitely has a step up. It wouldn't surprise me if he's sort of 60 or 70 this year and then gets into the top 30, top 25 the year after. Down the stretch, he shot 48% from the floor down the stretch. He got one of those shots that's a little bit funky looking, but it's not going to get blocked. And he's only going to get better physically. He averaged, you know, down the stretch, last 21 games, he averaged 13 points, 4 rebounds, 2.5 assists, 1.1 steals, and half a block, along with that 48% from the field. The threes, they need to get up to sort of 1.5, 1.8. The assist probably won't go up that much. I think he's going to be a 2 to 3 assist guy, especially with Lonzo around. But like you said earlier in the podcast, Lonzo's only going to make him better.
Yeah, he's a guy that I think is while Lonzo will be the motor, Brandon Ingram is going to be the heart of that machine if they become a team that's reminiscent of some of the old LA teams they've had out there. He's the guy that's got kind of that, you know, it's a lazy comparison, but that freakish Kevin Durant type upside, especially where they got that such similar bodies. You know, he only played, 28 minutes per game. So he got quite a bit of run last year. 9 points, 4 rebounds with the overall numbers. But I do think you can expect closer to that 13, 14 points per game number that you mentioned he hit down the stretch. The big question for him is he going to be a guy that can end up doing more on the defensive side of the ball? So I think he'll be a good source of points and rebounds, but those are, really a lot of the easier stats to get. Look at his free throw percentage, it was down at 62% as well there for the season. So not excellent there. So I guess if you're talking about 2-3 years down the road, if you're trying to project a little bit, where do you think he'll be in that amount of time? Because I think he's going to be a guy that's going to be a borderline superstar at that point. So I think there's a lot of room for him to grow up there. But where do you think he'll be?
I think he's going to be putting up sort of prime Rudy Gay stats. So 20 points, 7 rebounds, couple of assists, over a steal, close to a block, probably 1.5 threes, decent percentages. The key for him is going to be, as you said, putting up those defensive stats, because if you can get it, 1.5 steals and 0.8 blocks from small forward, those are huge stats to be able to add in Roto, along with the threes. And if he can keep the field goal percentage close to 50, even if it's 46, 47, that's also gravy. I mean, it's hard to find a small forward who's going to shoot that high as well as putting up those defensive stats. So he's got real good upside. I'm not sure how the Brook Lopez addition will help. That should take some a double team or two, even if it's not that many a game. It should take some defenders away from him and hopefully give him some open threes.
Yeah, and the other good thing is he really doesn't have anyone behind him on the depth chart that's really going to put any pressure on him. They're probably not going to be good again this year, so I think they're going to let him really get some run, get closer to 32 minutes a game, which I think is really good for his development. So maybe a guy that outperforms my expectations this year. I worry that with Lonzo there and those growing pains, they added Kentavious Caldwell-Pope, where, he's not a superstar, but he is a guy that's going to demand the ball a little bit. We already mentioned Larry Nance. I think he takes on a little bit of the scoring role. So I think there could be a little bit of growing pains with him this year. I'm not quite sure he takes that big of a leap that a lot of people do, but I do think in a dynasty league, he's a guy that if you can go get, he's worth waiting on, because in 2 to 3 years, he is going to be that guy that's a borderline superstar that's really a second or third option on your fantasy team. All right, so moving on to another guy that switched teams this year and surprisingly went to the Western Conference, which I don't get why these stars keep doing that. But it's Paul Millsap. You got him coming in at 57. I'm checking him down at 78. And like I mentioned earlier, I'm a little bit of a guy that tends to gravitate toward youth. And so I think that may be why I'm a little bit low on him than you. But obviously, Paul Millsap's an excellent basketball player, one of the best guys to watch, has a little bit of that old school game. But I worry about him, joining forces with Jokic. I think that Jokic is the guy there, and I worry about how Millsap's going to fit in with a guy that's, also plays, the big position and is, such a great ball handler, and passer, even though he had a little bit with Horford. But I think Jokic down, especially looking, years 2 and year 3, is a guy that's just really going to demand so much of the offense. I don't really know where Millsap.
I agree with all that. And, in retrospect, I have gotten too high. Just looking at the stats closely now, he shot a career low 44% from the field. He only shot 31% from three. Actually had a career high in scoring, but the steals were way down. The blocks halved from the previous year. This would be a mulligan I would take back and definitely put him 20 spots lower. So yeah, caught with my pants down here, Jordan. Thanks for that.
Yeah. Hey, no problem. I mean, hey, if you ever catch me on one of those, call me out on it. That's how we keep credibility, right? Might happen a little bit here where you're talking about, you know, a little bit of remorse. As I was typing it out, I wanted to go just my rankings, but didn't want to be that guy. But that's Dennis Schroeder. You have him coming in at 54. I have him down at 75, 56 in a rebuild. And looking at that, he should probably be up closer to at least number, you know, 60, 65. Just because he's going to have the keys to the offense for a team that's going to be just as shitty as the Bulls are going to be. So I think there's going to be a lot of good stats, bad team potential with him. But I do worry, you know, the turnovers are, you know, 3.5 turnovers last per game last year. I think there's actually room for that to go up a little bit because he's going to have a little bit of chance to have a little bit of a leash and be a little bit reckless. But you're really high on him at 54.
Yeah, I mean, so why don't you go? He only averaged 31.5 minutes a game last year, so that should go up to 35. He doesn't really have any competition for minutes. He doesn't really have any competition for leading the team in scoring or assists. Average 18 a game, 6 assists. This is his first full season starting. I don't see any reason why he can't be the sort of, you know, the Hawks equivalent of D'Angelo Russell. Maybe 2 threes a game. He won't have the steals Russell had, but he's got elite free throw percentage, you know, over 3 a game at 85%. Field goal percentage, actually, surprisingly, 45%. So he averaged 5 shots a game more than he did in his, you know, the season before last, but his field goal percentage actually went up. So that's a bit of a rare anomaly, I think. I don't think it's going to stay at 45. I think this year he's going to be one of those guys who just chucks up 18, 19 shots a game, shoots 42, 43% from the field. But like I said earlier, there's nothing wrong with getting a good guy on a crap team, and I think that's going to be Schroeder this year.
It seems like I've been in a couple of startup drafts this offseason too, and it seems like he's a guy that you really don't have to go after too early. Where you have him at 54, you can probably get him around pick 54 in a lot of your drafts, which is a guy that just, you know, immediately is going to provide a lot of returns this year. And I think he's the point guard that they build around there in Atlanta. I think when they let Jeff Teague go a couple of seasons ago, that was really kind of the writing on the wall that it was his time to really take the reins and have the control of the team. So if I, you know, if we set his over-under stat line, it will say 19.5 points, 7 rebounds, or excuse me, 7 assists, and we'll say 3.5 rebounds. Does that sound like something?
No, I'd actually go slightly over that. I think there's no reason he can't average 20.5 a game. The assists, I don't think, will be 7. It'll probably stay about what they are now, just over 6. Turnovers will probably stay the same, maybe go up a little bit more, and the field goal percentage is going to drop. But the free throw percentage, that's elite, and I think he can get up to 4.5, 5 attempts a game at 85, 86%. That's where the gravy's going to be, you know, if you can get him at 54.
Yeah, and it, for everything I've seen in this this offseason, it seems like you can get him around that a lot of times. I do have him at, you know, 56 in my rebuild ranks, which, you know, looking at some of the guys I have him behind in my contending ranks, that's probably about right. He should be up closer to that 60, 62 spot if I was going to redo it, which I will redo my rankings one more time before the season kicks off. I'll kind of kick out one more update when I extend them out a little bit.
Your
rankings go to what, 150?
I actually had about 220, and then I was like, oh, crap, I can't put these guys in here. They're trash. But so, yeah, I got it down to 180, I think.
Okay, well, I was thinking about going to either 150 or 200, so we'll have to maybe get together and suss something out and figure that out. But let's go ahead and move on to our next guy, another guy that plays the point guard position. Another guy that's a little bit older, where I tend to go towards the youth. I think that's going to be our big difference here, and that's Goran Dragic. You have him at 56. I have him down at 79. Obviously, he put up an excellent showing at Eurobasket this year. I just, in a dynasty league, I'd rather be a year too early getting rid of a guy than a year too late. And I think he's a guy that you've seen his best years, and it's still going to be, you know, a solid fantasy contributor for the next year. But he's a guy that each year his value is going to decrease a little bit, where you could still get a pretty decent haul on him. Even as a contending team, I think you have some pieces that are a little bit more intriguing. But you have him up at 56, so you're quite a bit higher on him. So what are your thoughts on Dragic in this year and then looking at...
Yeah, I mean, I'm a Suns fan, so I saw that the Bledsoe-Dragic combination that first year about 3 years ago, and I absolutely loved how they paired together. The thing I love about Dragic is he's a career 47% shooter from the field. Last four Yeah. Last four seasons, 49%.
Excellent. From the
while taking 3.5 threes a game. So that hasn't suffered at all. The only thing that really pisses me off about Dragic, and it's a rarity for especially a point guard, he's only a career 76% free throw shooter, which, you know, last year he shot 79%, which probably explains how he got to 20 points a game for the second time in his career. The assists are not as high as you'd like. You know, the Heat have all those playmakers like Waiters and James Johnson. Josh Richardson played a bit of point last year. I think the assists will probably drop closer to 5, but I expect his efficiency to go up again. He should be up around 1.5 threes a game, should be up to, you know, 78-79% from the free throw line. And the other thing was with a dynasty draft, you don't have to draft a guy specifically to hold him for 2-3 years' time. Sometimes I'll see a guy and be like, okay, Dragic is better than this player in the next 2 or 3 years. There's no reason I can't draft him and flip him at the deadline, much like they sort of do in reality. You can easily trade a guy like Dragic for a team who's lacking a point guard and lacking field goal percentage.
That is true. The one other thing that's really working well for Dragic, there's not a lot behind him on the depth chart. You know, I'm looking at them on Roto World right now, and the only other guy listed at point guard is Tyler Johnson. And I don't even know necessarily that his best role is as a point guard. He might be a guy that's better playing, you know, off ball as a shooting guard. So he should have, you know, a lot of time to really obviously be the guy there. Like I said, I worry about him long term. I think his best years are behind him, but he's still a guy that should average, you know, close to, you know, 20.6 assists, which there is a lot of use in that. And, you know, I guess the guy looking back, he's been fairly healthy. You know, he's played right around 70 games every single year for the last, you know, 5-6 years. So, you know, maybe a little bit too low on him. Just a guy that in a dynasty league, I'm maybe looking to move.
Yeah,
on
I could
from,
be a bit high, actually.
Like,
I mean,
you said, maybe at the deadline.
The way he plays reckless. Like, he literally just throws his body in the lane and just takes that contact, finishes. There's only so long a guy like that can keep running in and jumping into players and come down and land safely. And he is a little bit injury prone. He missed 9 games last year, 10 games before that. I suppose he's only missed 4 or 5 here, but those sorts of games, especially down the stretch, they can be a killer in head-to-head if you are banking on, you know, a week of 80 points and 25 assists from him and he misses 2 games.
The other thing that's kind of a little bit alarming, not necessarily alarming, but a little bit troubling with him is you look at how many injuries that he had last year, and then all of a sudden you look at, you know, Dragic points per game the last couple of years, you know, 16.3, 16.2, 14.1, and then all of a sudden last year it jumps up to 20.3. And so you kind of wonder how, you know, some of these guys that were injured coming back affects that. I don't really see it dropping clear back down to 14. I wouldn't be completely shocked if he dropped back down to like closer to that 16 number. And then at that point, maybe, you know, it's tough for him to kind of be around that top 50 if that's what he's bringing back. The one good thing is, like you said, built in amazing from the field. Field goal percentage is never going to be an issue.
That's hard.
Really,
that's,
a 2.9 turnovers per game. You can maybe make. Yeah, I mean, but, you know, you look at some of the other guys, some other point guards, you know, even Dennis Schroeder, you know, 3.5 turnovers, and I think that they're pretty comparable players. So I think that you can work around that, and I think that you can maybe make an argument that I'm going down a little bit this year just with all the other players around him coming back, maybe just by default.
Yeah, and they're going to play. I mean, Winslow should be healthy. Bit. He averaged, I think, almost 3 assists a game last year, maybe a little bit over. He's going to want the ball. I think they see him as a playmaker. I'm not sure if that's his best role or not, but, you know, Miami seems to make reclamation projects for these guys.
I think definitely, yeah. Yeah, and, you know, you look at Dragic's turnovers the last few years before it jumped up to 2.9 last year, you know, 2.6, before that 2.3, 2.2. So a guy that I think there is a little bit of built-in regression there for him to come back on the turnover front. Last guy on your list that you're a little bit higher on me is De'Aaron Fox, you know, the first rookie
I
in
bet
the
he's, I bet he's
this
happy
podcast. you know, put up great.
Yeah.
I'm sure he is thrilled and is definitely on it. I'll have to tweet at him and let him know. De'Aaron Fox, just outside of Lonzo Ball and I guess Ben Simmons, if you count him, and Markelle Fultz, I don't know that the role is necessarily going to be there for him to bring back that greater returns for a contending team this year. I was also a lot lower on him around draft time than it seemed like most people were. So go ahead and make the case for De'Aaron Fox at 77.
He's going to be a guy where athleticism trumps everything. And the guy in front of him, you would assume is who's in front of him, George Hill, not exactly an injury-free guy. He gets banged up every year. And he's another guy, Hill, who's actually probably better suited to a sixth-man role. So I can definitely see the Kings transitioning sort of midway through this season, starting Fox. Heald is a guy who is kind of limited defensively, so he's going to have one of those guys next to him the whole time because George Hill is a good defender. Fox could be a potentially really elite defender. His college stats are kind of where I see his stat line being in 2 years' time. So if he's a full-time starter, I can see him doing 17 points, 4 rebounds, 4.5 assists, 1.5, maybe 2 steals. Three-point shooting didn't fall in his 1 year. But the 48% from the field, I really like that for a point guard in college.
Yeah, I get a little bit wary of some of these guys that are in college that look like they just dominate so much, you know, purely due to that athleticism. I think there's a little bit more risk built in with those players like that. And not that, you know, he only got by on his athleticism. Obviously, he's, you know, a very good basketball player. But as you mentioned, you know, the three-point shot didn't really fall. Only hit half a three-pointer per game on 24%. And his 1 year at Kentucky. So that's pretty bad. That's going to really hurt you a lot there. For my point guard, I like them to be up to at least get near that one 3 point per game at minimum. So a lot of room he's got to come up in there. Shot a decent number from the field. So you hope that can translate. I just think that, with George Hill there, as you mentioned, he's still a very good defender. I think George Hill is still a guy that's useful in the NBA today. I think best case scenario for Fox is you're just hoping that the Kings are just absolutely garbage, and then George Hill is like a guy that's getting chopped at the deadline, and then they really turn it over to Fox, and he can just
exactly
good stats, bad.
It's kind of a recurring theme here from my end. Good stats, bad team.
Yeah, I've noticed we both have some guys that we hear some player molds that we kind of tend to like. It seems like. All right. Well, we were going to transition and talk about some of the lottery rookies, but we're already running over an hour. So we don't want to have to rush our way through that. So what do you say we table the lottery rookies and move those over to episode number 2?
Yeah, man. Sounds
really
good.
Take a deep dive at all the rookies. Awesome. But all right, that should wrap us up here for the day. We're running a little bit longer than we had anticipated. I guess just kind of pimp out some of your work you got coming up. Well, where can they find, you know, your rankings and some of the other
stuff? So, yeah, the rankings are hopefully going up soon. They'll be on #basketball.com. I haven't got any articles coming out yet. That'll probably start once the season kicks off. I'll hopefully do something weekly where we can update rankings and say why we've moved players up and down, who we're hot on, that sort of thing. So I haven't really got anything going yet.
Hey, nothing wrong with that. I'm the same way. I'm really focusing in on the podcast this year. I don't know how much written content I'll be able to pump out. I'm going to aim for, you know, 2-3 articles per month.
Exactly.
That may be stretching it during some months. Obviously, you know, we'll have this Dynasty podcast. I think we're going to maybe try and shoot for at least once a week. Obviously, with a little bit of a time zone difference we're working with, it gets a little bit tricky, as you know, it's a little bit after midnight my time here. Now, next week, we'll dive into some of the 2017 rookie, really take a look at that draft class, and then we'll also discuss a little bit of draft strategy for your different types of startup drafts, your head-to-head leagues, your roto leagues. We'll kind of talk about a little bit of our personal draft strategies and then kind of how we navigate and manage rookie picks and rookie drafts for those dynasty leagues that are, you know, our past year one and looking down the road. You can find me on Twitter at DinoBball. Please give me a follow. You can find Sam at MaceTastic. If you enjoyed the podcast or if you didn't and you have some suggestions or some critiques for us, please leave us a review on iTunes or wherever you listen to podcasts. If there's a certain podcasting stream that you want this to be on, that it's not right now, just hit one of us up on Twitter and we'll make sure that gets done.
It's our first pod doing Dynasty Ranks. Both of us have had a long weekend. It's late in the night. I've got a couple of drafts going on at the moment. I've got one on Real GM with the Phoenix Suns guys. So that's been going a while, and I've got a Dynasty one coming up with them as well. So we might be able to sort of give updates along as that draft progresses, which would be quite interesting.
Absolutely. One thing you'll hear us talk about a lot this year, I feel like, is ceilings and floors with certain players. consider this podcast like the floor. It's only going to get better.
No, it took us 20 minutes. My iPad crashed. My wife came in, had to tell her to get out. She was just getting me more mad, but I do love her. But this we will get better, guys.
Absolutely. All right, Sam. Well, hey, thanks for making time for me. We'll get some scheduling figured out this week, and we'll be back with another episode soon talking about some rookies and draft strategy.